The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. Well, I want to say thank you to Brent Noctegal for filling in yesterday from Jerusalem. His program, Bible Prophecy Reveals the Future of the American-Israeli Relationship, that's posted right now at thetrumpet.com. It's in the top position there in the Trumpet Daily Radio Show box on the website. So be sure to listen to that if you haven't. He had some really insightful commentary on the U.S. political candidates and the United States' relationship with Israel. And of course, with speaking of those political candidates, I think at least everyone in America is well aware of the fact that last night they had the first big presidential debate between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. I think some were saying going in, I didn't see any ratings results after the fact, but some were saying going in that as many as 100 million people might tune in for this spectacle, and that's really what it's turned out to be. It's just a spectacle. I guess maybe the first half hour or so, there was some talk on the issues, and then after that it really got to what probably most people were anxious to hear, some of the back and forth, some of the put-downs, some of the trivial subjects and such. As one conservative commentator put it after the fact, he said, well, that was fun watching two candidates I can't stand argue for 90-plus minutes, and seeing the candidate I dislike more, he has Hillary Clinton in brackets, get the better of it. Joe Hilliker's had a piece at the Trumpet several weeks ago, a couple months ago maybe, on how that this is the way the current election cycle is shaping up to be. The one who's not disliked as much is going to be the next president of the United States. As far as some of the issues, or ones that maybe weren't covered, it was interesting that nothing was discussed about immigration. And of course, during the primaries, that was Donald Trump's signature issue, the big beautiful wall and such, all of that, and really nothing to speak of coming from the moderators on immigration. And then with respect to Hillary Clinton, there was nothing about the Clinton Foundation, nothing about Benghazi, nothing about the email server, and some even criticized Trump for not taking advantage of one point in the debate to bring it up himself. But the media, as you would expect, helpfully providing cover for their favorite candidate, Mrs. Clinton. Nothing about the email server, of all things, or the Clinton Foundation, which has been in the news quite a lot these last couple of months as well. Well, I'll spare you some of the clips from last night's debate. I think, really, in the bigger picture, when you look at what's happening in the United States, and we've touched on this, I think, repeatedly in recent months, as this goes on, another election cycle, and so many people preoccupied with what's happening in politics, and so many of the news organizations in the United States in particular preoccupied with politics. As that happens, of course, the world is burning. It really is. It's burning, and nations are preparing for war. We mentioned this George Friedman article, The World Before World War II Reemerges. That was from September the 8th. We'll probably be referring back to this piece a time or two in the months ahead. But if you remember, he went into Eurasia in particular, what's happening in Europe, in China, in Russia, in the Middle East, and how that what we're seeing now is something we haven't seen since World War II, this kind of instability. And he said that these conflicts haven't yet flowed into a single conflagration, but they're starting to interact. They're starting to interact. And for example, you have the war in Syria. You have all this going on in the Middle East. And now refugees, of course, spilling into Europe. And so these things are beginning to interact, these conflicts, these areas of instability. And Friedman points out, too, that in the midst of all of this, the United States is returning back to its pre-World War II posture. It's withdrawing. It's in retreat. And he said what makes this so dangerous is that there's nothing to arrest these developments. There's nothing to stop the fighting in the Middle East. There's nothing to stop the refugee crisis. And he talks a lot about Russia and China and the problems that they're facing as well. Well, there was a video that Richard Palmer pointed out to me just this morning. And after viewing it, I can see that for the most part, it's, I think, built around that September 8th article by George Friedman. And the article's better, by the way. But given that this is radio, I thought I'd play a couple of sound bites for you. It's an interview that's put on. I forget the name of the company, but it's in association with Geopolitical Futures, which is Mr. Friedman's new company. He started Stratfor, as I think many of you know, back in 1996, and he left Stratfor, I believe, earlier this year to start this new company. And in this exchange, he's being interviewed in kind of a documentary style half hour video by Ed. D'Agostino, I believe is how you say his name. In any event, here's clip one in this exchange with George Friedman.
There is a global region that is destabilizing in a way not seen for over 70 years. Of the 7 billion souls alive today, 5 billion of them live there. From a Russia increasingly asserting itself, to China engaging in reimposing dictatorship, to the European Union disintegrating and the Middle East's borders dissolving, this part of the world is drowning in crisis. Just 20 years ago, this would have been unthinkable. Who could have predicted the Ukraine crisis, that the EU would lose a key member, that gates would be slamming shut on Europe's proudly open borders, or that Russia and the U.S. would be hurtling toward another Cold War or worse?
That's from the introduction of this documentary before it gets into the interview between the interviewer and Friedman. But I thought it was interesting just going through the intro there. Who could have predicted this 20 years ago? And, of course, it builds to the point saying that, well, George Friedman did. And he's been the one that's seen all of this in advance. And I thought it reminded me quite a lot of some of the programs and some of the articles that we've put together at thetrumpet.com. And sadly, we're not getting a lot of news organizations that are knocking on our door for interviews. But God is the one that receives the credit for all of this. God is the one that's given us thousands of years in advance. I mean, he's given us the playbook in advance. And so we know right where all of this is headed. As I say, that introduction it sounds like something that you've heard us produce here at The Trumpet. But no one individual or no group of men are to receive credit for this. It's God, as the prophet Isaiah said. I mean, he's the maker. He's the one who sees. He's the one who created all that there is. There is a God, as Daniel said. There is a God in heaven who reveals secrets, who makes the meaning of these visions known. And that's what we're here to expound upon, among other things. these great prophecies of God, to expound upon the prophecies of God, the sure word of Bible prophecy. Here's one exchange then between Ed D'Agostino and George Friedman.
You feel that the world is aligning both geopolitically and economically in a way that hasn't been seen since just before World War II. Tell me what you mean by that.
World War II is a war that stretched from Japan to the United Kingdom, from the Middle East to the Arctic. It was a single integrated chaos, if you will. We're now in a situation where that chaos is repeating itself, not in exactly the same way, but where the entire mass of Europe and Asia taken together, Eurasia, is destabilizing.
The chaos, he says there, is repeating itself. Now, as I say, I think the article is more effective because when you go on and listen to the rest of the video, he says he's not meaning to belittle the military strength of China in one statement, but really that's the way that it comes across, that you have Russia and China that are making these bold, aggressive moves, but they really don't have the strength or the power to, you know, to do it with any kind of a meaningful push. It's more for show. And part of it's brought on because they know there's not going to be a response from the United States. But then Mr. Friedman goes on to talk about just how awesome the military strength is in the United States and how no one can compete with the U.S. Navy. And it just paints the picture that as bad as it is, and as much as, you know, it's very similar to the days before World War II, and that it's likely that something massive could explode in Eurasia because these conflicts are beginning to overlap. They're beginning to spill over into other regions. But still, I mean, just looking at the tone or listening to the tone in this video, it was a little disappointing because it's as if the U.S. Navy is going to be able to protect America's standing in the world for decades to come because it's so overwhelmingly powerful compared to China's or compared to Russia's. I would refer you again to a piece we had at the Trumpet a couple of weeks ago, The History and the Future of the U.S. Navy. This article talked about how the world is changing dramatically. And I've got a couple of stories here that really bring this out. First, we'll go through Victor Davis Hanson's piece from last week, A Hard Rain is Going to Fall. That just gives us, again, a wonderful perspective or overview based upon history. And then this other one that I'll get to in a second, The Gathering Nuclear Storm. It highlights what we covered at the Trumpet a couple of weeks ago. I mean, it doesn't stress what we pointed out about the U.S. Navy and how so much of that power and strength of the United States could be neutralized by other developing powers. But this article really does point out that these developing powers, the ability to create nuclear weapons and the fact that they're getting smaller and smaller, well, it's a frightening piece in many ways, given what we know about prophecy, and you know how man is going to make use of these weapons. But first, this one from Victor Davis Hanson. The title says it all, A Hard Rain is Going to Fall. I mean, it's coming. He says here, world events seem relatively calm, but repeated appeasement has built up pressure across the globe, and someone has to be there when crisis erupts. So it's just been one act of appeasement after another, and it's building. It's building, even though it might seem like there's a relative calm right now. He said in the summer of 1939, well, he talked about what led up to World War I first, and then I'm skipping ahead here. He says in the summer of 1939, most observers thought Adolf Hitler was finally through with his serial bullying. Appeasement supposedly had satiated his once enormous territorial appetites. But on September 1st, Nazi Germany unexpectedly invaded Poland and touched off World War II, which consumed some 60 million lives. There were people right before that, really, who were saying, peace in our time. We finally achieved peace. And then the invasion of Poland. It turns out that Hitler's appetite wasn't quite satisfied yet. He invaded Poland, and what did it touch off? A world war that consumed 60 million lives. Hansen says wars often seem to come out of nowhere, as unlikely events ignite long simmering disputes into global conflagrations. See, it may just be one little unlikely event that touches off this long simmering dispute or division or conflagration that's been going on all across these regions, all throughout Eurasia. The instigators often are weaker attackers who foolishly assume that more powerful nations wish peace at any cost and so will not react to opportunistic aggression. See, the instigators are sometimes the ones with the weaker navy, or maybe with fewer weapons. Although when you look at what the United States is doing with its nuclear arsenal, and I'll come to this article, another one here in just a second, and what Russia's doing, leave aside Iran. I mean, we've talked a lot about Iran, and there's good reason to, this disastrous nuclear deal. But meanwhile, you have these nations like Russia and China that are not only in the hands of nuclear weapons, or they have nuclear weapons in their arsenal, they're expanding that arsenal. They're adding to it. He says here, unfortunately, our late summer calm of 2016 has masked a lot of festering tensions that are now coming to a head, largely due to disengagement by a supposedly tired United States. See, that's really what you see. That's an underlying theme in debates like last night, even though I didn't see all of it myself. But the United States is tired. You remember the statement years ago by Ehud Olmert of Israel, saying that Israel's tired of fighting. And that's the sentiment all across the United States. We've got to look to ourselves. We've got to withdraw back to that pre-World War II posture. We're tired of fighting. We're tired of spilling blood. We're tired of having our forces spread out all over the world. We're tired of maintaining the world order. We're tired of leading the way with NATO. And so Europe's got to step up. And Russia, well, you know, Putin's a pretty good guy, Mr. Trump thinks. And China, President Obama said last week, well, their economy's doing fantastic. Lots of things to praise about China. It says, in contrast, war, unlike individual states, does not sleep. This is Victor Davis Hanson. Russia has been massing troops on its border with Ukraine. Putin apparently believes that Europe is in utter disarray and assumes that President Obama remains most interested in apologizing to foreigners for the past evils of the United States. Putin is waging that no tired Western power could or would stop his reabsorption of Ukraine or the Baltic states. Next. In that video, Friedman talks about just how important historically Ukraine and the Baltic states have been to Russia, serving as a buffer zone. He was saying that Russia defeated Germany in Ukraine. I mean, they want Ukraine back. They want the Baltic states back. And they're making moves to that end. He talks about the disastrous Iran nuclear deal. And then he says North Korea is more than just delusional. Refers to the recent nuclear test that they've run off. It says radical Islamists likewise seem emboldened to try more attacks on the premise that Western nations will hardly respond with overwhelming power. He refers then to the attacks in Manhattan and New Jersey and Minnesota. More recently here in the U.S. or over in the U.S., It says Europe and the United States have been bewildered by huge numbers of largely young male migrants from the war-torn Middle East. Political correctness has paralyzed Western leaders from even articulating the threat, much less replying to it. Political correctness, it's paralyzed the West. Didn't even come up last night in the debate. Instead, the American government appears more concerned with shutting down the detention center at Guantanamo Bay, ensuring that no administration official utters the words Islamic terror, and issuing warnings to Americans not to lash out due to their supposedly innate prejudices. Aggressors are also encouraged by vast cutbacks in the U.S. defense budget. That's something that Mr. Friedman didn't really get into. Here again, he talks about the massive size of the U.S. Navy as compared to China. Sitting on all these nuclear weapons, by the way, China. But what about these massive defense cutbacks? What signal does that send to America's enemies abroad? Hansen says it would be a mistake to assume that war is impossible because it logically benefits no one or is outdated in our sophisticated 21st century or would be insane in a world of nuclear weapons. I mean, it's a mistake to think this, that war is impossible because, well, how would it benefit anyone? And look at how sophisticated we are. And who would fire off nuclear weapons? I mean, to think that. And yet a lot of people do. President Obama, just last week, I played this for you on Friday's program, this clip from his speech at the UN. Notice what he had to say about nuclear weapons. This is clip 3.
Indeed, our international order has been so successful that we take it as a given that great powers no longer fight world wars. That the end of the Cold War lifted the shadow of nuclear Armageddon. That the battlefields of Europe have been replaced by peaceful union. That China and India remain on a path of remarkable growth.
I just read through that again this morning, and I know I played it on Friday, but it's an astounding statement. Not unlike some of the others about how great the world is today, and we've played those for you before as well. But here he's talking about the international order led by America, that it's been so successful that we can bank on the fact that there's no longer going to be world wars, that we don't have to worry about nuclear weapons being used. That's what a president of the United States is saying. That's what the leader of the free world is convinced, that those weapons will never be used, that we're never going to see battlefields in Europe again. And China and India, I mean, they're on the path of remarkable growth. They're not planning to use all of those nuclear weapons. North Korea, Iran, Russia, it's just not going to happen. I mean, we take it for granted, the president said. That kind of thinking, that's what's been directing the United States for over 7 years now. Victor Davis Hanson says, human nature is unchanging and remains irrational. Evil is eternal. Unfortunately, appeasement is often seen by thugs not as magnanimity, I won't try to say it, to be reciprocated, but as timidity to be exploited. Someone soon will have to tell the North Koreans that a stable world order cannot endure its frequent missile launches and nuclear detonations. Someone could remind Putin that the former Soviet republics have a right to self-determination. Someone might inform the Chinese that no one can plop down artificial islands and military bases to control commercial sea lanes. Someone might make it clear to radical Islamic terrorists that there's a limit to Western patience with their chronic bombing, murdering, and destruction. See, someone should tell or stop these individuals or these nations or these groups. But the point he's making here is that there are no arresters. That's what Friedman brought out in his September 8th piece. There's no arresters. There's no one to stop it anymore. There's no one to stop the chronic bombing. There's no one to stop the murdering. There's no one to stop the destruction. And so all of these developments, well, they continue to spread. The conflicts, as Friedman said, have not flowed into a single conflagration yet, but they have begun to interact. They have definitely begun to interact. Hansen says the problem is that there's no other someone with the requisite power and authority except the United States. But for a long time, America has done more than its fair share of international policing, and its people are tired of costly dragon slaying abroad. See, there are no arresters. It's the new world order. It's the world without America. And you see what it's touching off in the Middle East, in Central Africa, with the crises mounting in Europe, all across Asia. It's not that Russia and China don't have problems or difficulties with their economies, and Friedman brings this out. But that's just thrown into the mix, this toxic mix. And it's about to explode, finally, here. Hansen says the result is that at this late date, the tough medicine of restoring long-term deterrence is almost as dangerous as the disease of continual short-term appeasement. I mean, we're so far into the appeasement. Now what happens if someone comes along and wants to restore long-term deterrence? Not that Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump have given that indication. If anything, they're set on withdrawing all the more. Now, Mr. Trump does say he's going to build up the military. But outside of that, whether you look at the current president or those that are trying to become the next president, the United States is withdrawing into its World War II posture. Hansen says Obama apparently assumes he can leave office as a peacemaker before his appeased chickens come home to roost in violent fashion. He's assured us that the world has never been calmer or quieter. Others said the same thing in the last calm summer weeks of 1914 and 1939. War clouds are gathering, a hard rain is soon going to fall. War clouds are gathering. And this next piece from the Wall Street Journal offers a similar analogy. The gathering nuclear storm. The gathering nuclear storm. It says here the gravest danger we faced is fast approaching nuclear instability. You have a world where there's nuclear weapons all over the place. And the Wall Street Journal says many believe it's possible safely to arrive at nuclear zero. It's not. Enough warheads to bring any country to its knees can fit in a space volumetrically equivalent to a Manhattan studio apartment. And so the technologies are changing. And it may not matter that the United States has 10 aircraft carriers. Given this kind of destructive power that you can fit into a Manhattan apartment. That's the thing. Here again, go back to that Trumpet article, The History and Future of the U.S. Navy. Well, if we had this size of a Navy in the lead up to those previous wars, of course, it would be no contest. But with nuclear weapons all over the world, some 16,000 of them, and so many buried in deep tunnels within China that we don't even know how many are even there. It says try to find that in the vastness of Russia, China, or Iran. Even ICBMs that, well, further on in this piece, again, this is the gathering nuclear storm at the Wall Street Journal, September 23rd. It says, as we shrink our nuclear forces and fail to introduce new types, China's doing the opposite, increasing them numerically and forging ahead of us in various technologies, some of which we have forsworn. It says, because China's nuclear weapons infrastructure is in part housed in 3,000 miles of tunnels opaque to American intelligence, we can't know the exact velocity and extent of its buildup. Why does the Obama administration, worshipful of nuclear agreements, completely ignore the nuclear dimension of the world's fastest rising major power, with which the United States and allies engage in military jockeying almost every day on multiple fronts? It says, lulled to believe that nuclear catastrophe died with the Cold War, America is blind to rising dragons. See, obsessed over striking a nuclear deal with Iran, which clears the way for them to build weapons. And yet the narrative established by this administration is that, well, this spared us, this saved us from a world with Iran having nukes. All the while, as the Wall Street Journal brings out, you have an administration that's completely ignoring the nuclear dimension of the world's fastest rising major power, China. It goes on to point out how Russia is ignoring all the limitations that the Obama administration strives to exceed. You have, okay, there's an agreement. We've agreed to limit them to this. And President Obama goes, on America's part, he goes above and beyond. Russia does everything it can to cheat, to lie, as it builds up its arsenal. Where was the part on this piece where, well, it gave a number? I don't see it offhand. Maybe I'll get to it as I keep reading. It says, further, in the almost complete absence of its own soft power, Russia frequently hints at nuclear use. All this comports with historical Soviet-Russian doctrine and conduct. It's an important element of Putin-esque tactics for reclaiming the near abroad, and dovetails perfectly with Mr. Obama's advocacy of no first use. Here you have Russia on the one hand threatening to use weapons, and Obama really trying to come out with an official policy stating that America won't use it first. Well, here are the figures I mentioned a minute ago. Russia deploys about 150 more nuclear warheads than the U.S., intensively modernizing it, it finds ways to augment its total via undisguised cheating. Bound by no numerical or qualitative limits, China spends its strategic development. Its strategic development. It says later, to cripple U.S. retaliatory capability, an enemy would have to destroy only 4 or 5 submarines at sea, 2 sub-bases, 6 bomber bases, and 450 missile silos. That's what it would take to cripple the United States' response. This is the kind of thing that a Navy is not going to be able to rescue. Russia dreams publicly of its former hold on Eastern Europe. Well, let me skip ahead to the conclusion here. It says, when they do occur, and if without American reaction, China or Russia have continued to augment their strategic forces to the point of vast superiority where one or both consider a first strike feasible, we may see nuclear brinkmanship or worse, in which the United States, startled from sleep and suddenly disabused of the myth of sufficiency, might have to capitulate, allowing totalitarian dictatorships to dominate the world. Well, that's a chilling conclusion. And here again, in looking what's already happening in Eastern Europe, in the South China Sea, what happens? We may see nuclear brinkmanship or worse, in which the United States is startled out of its slumber, with the United States capitulating, stepping aside, allowing totalitarian dictatorships to dominate the world. And of course, what this article doesn't foresee is the fact that it's coming on the United States. It makes me think of what Herbert Armstrong said years ago in a message, that the unthinkable will happen. The unthinkable will happen. That's what this article at the Wall Street Journal, I think, does effectively. It shows you that nuclear war is thinkable, very thinkable. And yet there's so many convinced that it could never happen. Even in a world that's going up in flames, even in a world with thousands of weapons so powerful that you could put a few of them in one Manhattan apartment, and that arsenal in itself could bring a major nation to its knees. That's the world we live in today. And that's the world that so many leaders today are convinced. Well, it's safe. It's tranquil. There are a few messy spots, but on the whole, I mean, we wake up each day and just take it for granted that there will never be a nuclear war, that there will never, ever again be world war. Well, Herbert Armstrong talked about the great paradox. All of this evil. I mean, really, even Victor Davis Hanson touched on the evil in human nature. He's a rarity. There aren't too many that see human nature as clearly as he does in the world of commentating, I mean. We certainly are aware of it here because of the Bible. The Bible tells us, Romans 8:7, Jeremiah 17:9, and other verses as well. Human nature is unchanging and remains irrational. In fact, you could add to that that it's worsening today, considering what Paul said in 2 Timothy 3. Evil men and seducers wax worse and worse. You add what John prophesied in Revelation 12, that Satan now cast down since 1986, confined to this earth along with his demons. And we see evil like never before. And it's leading to world war. There is a gathering storm. There's a gathering storm. That's for sure. It's about to explode upon us. And, of course, God says to us in Amos 6 that we better not be at ease in Zion. Now is the time to be alert and awake as never before. This other article, again, Richard Palmer gave me this morning. The actual title is "To the Moon, North Korea? ? Or Does a Rocket Have a Darker Aim?" What about this program of North Korea's? Richard was saying that really they should have titled it "How North Korea is Working with Iran to Develop a Nuclear Weapon." They just fired one off. Not but a couple weeks ago, or test fired. It says inside the United States intelligence agencies, this is from the New York Times, there's considerable skepticism that North Korea is truly eager to plant a flag on the lunar landscape. The agencies are exploring another explanation, that Mr. Kim, the North Korean leader, is racing ahead as the United States is distracted by a bruising presidential election. To develop a way for his growing arsenal of nuclear weapons to reach New York and Washington. Oh, I just want to go to the moon, that's all. But here he is, this crazed, irrational leader, racing ahead as the United States is distracted by this bruising presidential election. And the article goes on to point out how that they may be doing this, the North Koreans, in joint partnership with Iran. With Iran. It says further on, few threats as urgent as the dramatic escalation of North Korea's nuclear and missile programs are likely to confront Hillary Clinton and or Donald Trump as president. An engine that delivers 80 tons of thrust would have about 3 times the power of an advanced North Korean rocket shown in a ground test in April. So they're rushing ahead. They're rushing ahead, knowing full well the United States is distracted, knowing full well that the current president, the lame duck president, is convinced that we live in a world where there will never be another world war, where no one will fire off a nuclear weapon. And North Korea, meanwhile, is racing ahead. It says the potential links to Iran complicate the issue. Iran has ignored a United Nations Security Council resolution passed in conjunction with last year's agreement freezing its nuclear program to refrain from tests of nuclear-capable missiles for 8 years. Further on, it says that the Obama administration has not sought sanctions, knowing that they'd be vetoed by Russia and China. This is speaking of Iran's involvement, by the way. Nor has it said much in public about the details of the cooperation on the new rocket engine. There's a long history of sharing missile technology. So Iran basically is ignoring the Security Council resolutions. They're continuing on, test firing their missile arsenal. And then now they're in cahoots with North Korea. And the Obama administration can do nothing. Nothing. It says here, whatever the goal, the most important aspect of the new North Korean engine is that its design appears to be indigenous rather than a knockoff of decades-old Soviet missiles. That suggests a growing domestic ability, which may explain the appeal to Iran, which intelligence officials speculate may be helping to fund the effort. Well, isn't that amazing? Where did Iran get the money to help fund this effort in North Korea? Well, the United States has done everything it can to send money to them, even in unmarked bills, cash payments. Where is all of this leading? Matthew 24 and verse 21 says, "Then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world, to this time, no, nor ever shall be." There's never been anything like what's coming. There's never going to be anything like it again. It says in verse 22, "Except those days shall be shortened, there should no flesh be saved alive, but for the elect's sake those days shall be shortened." God has to intervene to save mankind from himself. Mr. Armstrong in The Incredible Human Potential says humanity has two alternatives. Either there is an almighty, all-powerful God who's about to step in and set up the kingdom of God to rule all nations with supernatural and supranational force to bring us peace, or else all human life will be obliterated. The unthinkable will happen. My father picked up on this theme as well more recently. This theme that Herbert Armstrong was talking about decades ago. It's from a February 2014 Trumpet article. Go back and read it. It goes by that title, "The Unthinkable Will Happen." He talks about how that the last world war, it ended. It ended with the setting off of atomic bombs, two of them. What will a world war be like that starts with nuclear bombs? All it takes is one. And going back to what Victor Davis Hanson said in that piece, look at the seemingly small incidents that touched off worldwide conflagration. Well, we know the basic framework. It's provided there for us in Bible prophecy. We know which nations are going to be lashing out at other nations. We know all of the principal players. And we know in so many of these prophecies that the United States, the end-time descendants of Manasseh, the tribe of Manasseh in your Bible, we know that in so many of those crucial prophecies. The United States is absent. It's gone missing. And so that's where this is ultimately building. Even though the U.S. might have a big navy today compared to other nations, there's lots and lots and lots of other things that we better be thinking about and watching for. My father wrote in that 2014 piece, these problems are almost too horrifying to even contemplate. That's why most people ignore the potential for nuclear war. They just ignore it. President Obama says last week, well, we just take for granted. We're never going to have a world war. There's never going to be another nuclear weapon bombed or fired. We just take it for granted. Well, we can't. Not if we're students of Bible prophecy. We have to tell you what's coming. Jesus warned us. And thankfully, he said also in that same passage that immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens shall be shaken, and then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. And then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. He's coming back in the same manner that he left us, as it says in Acts 1. This time, though, he's not coming to die for the sins of the world. He's coming to forcibly put an end to human suffering and sin, finally and forever. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll update you on the requests for literature coming in over the weekend here in the UK in response to our television program. And we've also got quite a few emails to get through as well. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. In 1945, the detonation of the atomic bomb in Japan brought an end to World War II with overwhelming force. This new technology ended the worst war this world had ever experienced. But with it came a new, dangerous age. The age of atomic and nuclear energy had arrived, accompanied by weaponry capable of destroying all life on Earth. Man's number one problem now became that of human survival. After signing the Japanese surrender, General MacArthur spoke to America and the world about peace. And with it, he brought a grim warning. He said, "Men since the beginning of time have sought peace. Military alliances, balances of powers, leagues of nations, all in turn failed, leaving the only path to be by way of the crucible of war. The utter destructiveness of war now blots out this alternative. We have had our last chance. If we do not devise some greater and equitable system, our Armageddon will be at our door." For today's program, we offer you two booklets at no cost or obligation to you. We Have Had Our Last Chance provides a hard-hitting, concise history lesson about the end of World War II and warning given by General Douglas MacArthur. In The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like, Herbert W. Armstrong shows you where world evils are leading and how God will bring about peace and plenty. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program.
This past weekend, we had our TV program, A Cultural Collapse of Historic Proportions. You can see that right now at thetrumpet.com. We've gotten some good emails from some of you listeners that also view some of our videos at our websites. Good response to the program in that sense. As far as requests for literature, however, the requests were lower than usual this past weekend, 107 total requests. The program offered Character in Crisis and also The Missing Dimension in Sex. That book, The Missing Dimension, by the way, I think we've offered it two or three times, and each time it's brought in fewer than I anticipated, so that's a little bit disappointing, as I say, but that's the way it is. This next weekend, we've got the Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy, and on the other hand, that book has done extremely well for us. Each time that we've offered it, it helps, I suppose, that it's fairly new. We've only had that out, I guess, less than a year? I forget the exact month that we produced that. In any event, previous programs in which we've offered that have really brought in a pretty high response. So the program, that video, is based on some of the radio shows we've done in the last 3 weeks or so, where we've talked a lot about the European army and the leadership crisis in Europe, and I've got more to get into on that tomorrow, another piece here that I just don't have time to get into because I want to go through a few emails. But Europe's leadership crisis, we've talked often on that the last few weeks. So we kind of took some of the highlights from those radio shows and pulled together enough content for one half-hour presentation, and it came out quite strong, and I'm hopeful now that this next weekend, it'll bring in quite a few responses. A few emails that have come in. This one here, in response to Mr. Noctegal filling in yesterday, it says, I would sure love to hear a program such as Watch Jerusalem. He talked a little bit about his new program that we're hoping to produce sometime on the Sunday programming slot, somewhere in there, maybe Sunday evening. It, of course, will depend on where you live on this earth as far as the time that it will actually play, but that's what we're aiming for. I don't know if he mentioned when he estimated it would be on, but that is something to look forward to, a weekly program coming straight from Jerusalem. This listener again says, would sure love to hear a program such as Watch Jerusalem and would so hope to be able to hear it somewhere so that I could also say that I'm listening to Jerusalem as I watch Jerusalem. Please send us some dirt from there also, from the dig, so that we may say we smell it and feel it as well. This one here from one of our younger listeners. I'm from Trinidad. I listen with my mom on evenings after school, and I personally find these prophecies inspiring and uplifting. That's one of our younger listeners. It says, thank you all for keeping us attuned to God's voice, helping us to stay sober and steadfast in our faith, supporting His great work. We're just laborers and friends, but we know who is who. Another one here from Arizona. I love the clips you play from Mr. Armstrong and Mr. Reagan. Those clips show both men had a strong faith in God and looked to Him as our source of strength. This one here from Edmond, our headquarters area, around our campus, I presume. We really appreciate the Trumpet Daily programs and your hard work to produce them. Another one here from one of our male listeners. I enjoy that you integrate radio spots of Mr. Armstrong and President Reagan. I've been able to keep up with all the radio programs at least since June. I like listening on SoundCloud since I can pause it without losing my place, unlike when I listen on thetrumpet.com. So I've got some adjustments to make, I suppose, on the website. It says, I heard that 70% of those arrested in the Charlotte rioting had out-of-state IDs. These professional rioters are on the level of an organized crime cartel backed up by the president and his fellows. That was brought out, by the way, on Trumpet Hour on Friday, I believe, the fact that so many of these rioters were coming from out of state. Just appalling what's happening. And how much of it, as Mr. Armstrong said back in the 1960s, is organized and planned It's not some kind of a spontaneous demonstration in so many ways. But there's agitators that are stirring it up and that are planning to cause America's cities to go up in flames. This next one from Montreal, Canada. Thank you for your wonderful work. As I listened to your show yesterday, Thursday, September 22nd, I was most lifted by your sharing of part of your father's coworker letter. That was from last week. This one here brings a smile to my face. Many thanks. It's from Australia. Many thanks for the ongoing excellence of the Trumpet Daily. I know multitasking isn't recommended for everything, but as a homemaker, listening to the program while undertaking household cleaning is a great and beneficial way of utilizing time wisely. I just did an hour of window cleaning, not my favorite job, while listening to the program, and the sense of achievement is heightened as I now have sparkling windows and my mind has been stimulated and further informed. I know many of my lady friends really love listening to the program while doing household duties. It's one of the many blessings of being an at-home mom. We know it's a constant team effort for you all. So heartfelt thanks. A couple more here. This one says, that was an excellent timeline overview of events. I believe this was last Thursday's show. Making clear the accelerating increase of woe, especially upon the sinful United States, where liars and lies lead our people to destruction. And the events in Charlotte should be a clarion call for repentance, but alas, we have the wrath of God upon us. Finally, from Uganda, it says, once again, we see in today's news about riots in USA, and your teaching references above proves correct. The fatherless nation, so common now throughout the world. That coming from a little band of listeners down in Africa in Uganda. Well, that's all that we have time for on today's program. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you again tomorrow.